We are back with more of Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. Everyone has holiday traditions. No matter the holiday that you're celebrating, there are likely specific foods that you make and decorations you put up that help you get into the holiday mood. Well, here at Lake Effect, one of our holiday traditions is our annual Games to Gift list. Compiled by our resident games expert Jim Lauder, the list is in its 10th year and once again has this year's suggestions for role-playing, family, kids, and other game categories. We'll start out with some of the trends in the game world, and Lauder says that like last year, there is an oversaturation in the market.
There are lots of people making amazing games, too many that you can play in at one time, or stores can stock in depth. So that's created a lot of shelf shortage and attention shortage for players.
So good games come out, but nobody pays attention to
Correct.
Them. Correct.
Yeah. So you can create a fantastic game, but finding a market now is really tough because the competition is very, very rigorous.
One of the things you also mentioned are solo game modes. And I have to say, I like that idea because there are times when I'm my best competition.
Mm-hmm.
And so talk about that. How is that trend or why is that trend started?
Well, that touches upon the larger trends in society with people working multiple jobs and having limited time and having a hard time getting game groups together. So many more games now are offering solo play rules.
Although, you know, I think one of the things about games is that you want to do them with other people. At
mm-hmm.
least I do.
That, yes.
You know, there's a social aspect to it.
Absolutely.
That I hate losing.
Yeah.
As much as I like to compete against myself, you
right.
know, I get bored with my own dialogue.
Sure.
Yeah.
And yes, that social aspect, playing around the table with other people.
Or even online, if you're playing
right.
you know, a group in that way,
sure.
is a lot of fun. And so what about role-playing games?
This is really sort of the year of role-playing games. The New York Times and Washington Post in the last couple of months have run major articles talking about how role-playing games are the thing in pop culture right now. And part of that is brought about by actual play, which is kind of an amazing thing for people who learned how to play by other people teaching them the rules. These are people who play online, groups that get together, often voice actors, things like that, who play role-playing game campaigns online and people follow along. And that is how they learn how to role-play. They don't learn by people telling them your friend's older brother, older sister played, and they're going to introduce you to the game. They can watch games being played sometimes in real time online.
How very cool.
It's amazing. And
who thought, would have thought, you know, 30 years ago with Dungeons and Dragons in your basement
right.
that it's turned into this?
And as the games have gotten more visibility, more people in Hollywood have come out as gamers and talked about how they played a lot of role-playing games as kids, and some of them still play and are very visible in playing. And it's the third or fourth generation of gamers now who can claim a space in pop culture that was never available to the people who were playing in the 70s and 80s.
You just mentioned a word, admit to it. Is there still a stigma against playing games?
It's going away. And with role playing, that's one of the things. It is going away. It was at one time, as you said, the images people playing in their parents' basements, and it was all guys. And it was a very specific type of gaming that was going on. And that was never really true, but it was the dominant image that people had, and that prevented some people from getting involved in the hobby.
So that is getting better.
It's getting much better.
Good.
When you go to game conventions now, you see a much broader spectrum of people. There are families. There are a lot more women at conventions. There are people of color. It's marvelous.
So let's get into some of your picks for 2019, role-playing games.
Yes, since that's such a big topic right now, I picked three starter sets. A lot of the game companies are recognizing that there are plenty of new players who want to learn how to play their games, and role-playing games can have a steep learning curve. So they've created these starter box sets. And the first one I mentioned is the D&D's Essential Kit, which is a streamlined version of even their starter set from a few years ago. Teaches you the fifth edition of the game, doesn't include a solo adventure, but does include rules for playing with one person running the game as dungeon master and one player, which is moving in that direction. And if you have trouble getting your game group together, this is a way to pivot that game toward a smaller group. It includes dice and all kinds of cards and different props. It also includes kind of a gateway into the D&D Beyond, which is the online aspect of Dungeons & Dragons.
I was going to ask you if it sets you up so that you can then start participating.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so it's got extra adventures and different things like that. It sort of leads you to the online component as well.
Okay. Well, and then there's one you have here that we were talking again before we turn on the microphones. I'm very fond of the Kraken and as a mythical creature. And this is Call of Cthulhu.
Yes, the H.P. Lovecraft investigatory horror game. And role-playing games in general are group storytelling. And the thing that separates the different kinds of games, the rules model the types of stories you tell. So Dungeons & Dragons, heroic fantasy, sword and sorcery, you kill monsters, you save the kingdom, you get stronger, you get to be a greater hero. Call of Cthulhu, you are investigating cosmic horror, and you start as a normal character, and as you learn things, it gets worse and worse for you. So you lose sanity, and it becomes more dire as you play.
What do you gain?
Well, you get to tell the story of how that character got destroyed, and that's the narrative that the game system models.
Interesting.
So it's the opposite of Dungeons and Dragons. It tends to be played in Dungeons and Dragons tends to be played in long campaigns. Call of Cthulhu is a great one shot, one night game for 4 hours. Yeah, people will play at a lot of conventions. The cool part about the Call of Cthulhu starter set is it includes the quick start rules and all of the expected things to teach you the game, but it includes a solo book. So it's structured a bit like a Pick-A-Path adventure book, but it also includes the game's role-playing rules baked into the Pick-A-Path book, so you learn it as you play. And then you can hand it to somebody else and say, this is the sort of adventure we're going to have. This is the sort of game we want to play. And so it's a tool not just to teach you the game, but to actually build a player group.
Very cool.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah. Well, what about Cyberpunk Red Jumpstart?
Yes, and Cyberpunk and all of these games have been around forever. Dungeons & Dragons since the mid to late 70s, Call of Cthulhu since 1981, Cyberpunk since 1988. Created by Mike Pondsmith. It's had a couple other additions. There's a new computer game coming out that is going to jump the timeline, the shared world part of the Cyberpunk game ahead, and that's in development. And what this Quick Start Rules does is it links the older games to this upcoming computer game.
Okay.
And it also introduces you to the game. It has pre-generated player characters. And Cyberpunk, for those who don't know, is this sort of dystopian future where giant corporations wage war and the individuals who play in this game are sort of film noir beat characters with high tech who sort of survive on the margins of society.
Ooh, and then rage against the machine.
Correct. Yes.
Oh, I like that. For the rebels in your gaming group.
That is right.
There we go.
And that's a marvelous starter set as well.
All right. Family games. You've got a couple here as well. Jaws. Are we talking
Jaws? The movie. Yeah, the movie. And the really remarkable thing about this is there was a time where licensed games, where you would get the license to do a TV show or a movie. And those were, for game companies, the things that they put the least amount of effort in. You would put Simpsons on Monopoly, and there it's Simpsons Monopoly, and we're done. Now, again, because of the amount of thought and the amount of just incredible talent that's available for these game designs, even licensed games like this are remarkable. And Jaws tells it's a partial co-op game. One person plays the shark. The other three people are fighting against the shark. They are Quint and Brody and Hooper fighting against the shark. The first act of the game is you are on Amity Island and you are trying to figure out where the shark is, and the shark is trying to swim around and eat as many people as possible. Once you either lose enough swimmers or you identify where the shark is, you flip the board game over and you are on the orca. And then the shark is trying to finish you off.
Ooh.
And so it is trying to sink the boat or eat the heroes. And the heroes cooperate using different – each one of them has a different set of skills and cards that they can put into play to fight the shark to the end.
So what are the ages for this?
The ages for Jaws are 12 and up, and it's a 2-to-4-player game. You can play it as a 2-player game with one person playing the shark and the other person playing the people, but it works best with 4.
Okay. What about Wordsy? Because anything that has word in it, I love word games.
Yes.
And so what is this? What are you doing with the words?
Wordsy is a game that came out in late 2017, and I was going to mention it last year and forgot.
So we're mentioning it this year.
So I mentioned it this year. It's a game where you have 4 columns with 2 through 5 points, and then you put 2 letters in each column, and they're all consonants. And when the 8th letter of the 8 are flipped over, you try to come up with a word that uses as many letters as possible. You can add as many letters as you want to the ones that are on the table, but you are trying to use as many letters as possible. When you think you have a winner, and obviously if you can use both of the letters in the 5 column, that's a winning strategy, you flip a 30-second timer, and then everybody else has to finish their words as well.
So it's kind of Scrabble on steroids.
It is.
In 3 dimensions.
But you don't have to have all of the letters to spell. So it's relying upon your vocabulary. You can come up with words that are only using 3 or 4 of the letters of the 8 and still win a round. But the other aspect of it that's really clever is that push your luck mechanic. The longer you wait, the more you wait to see if you can find the perfect word. Somebody else may flip that timer and you may have to settle for whatever you have. But if the person flips the timer and has fewer points than somebody else for that round, they get penalized.
I have to try this.
It's lovely. I really enjoy that game a lot.
It sounds addictive,
actually. It is, and it plays very quickly, and it's got a solo option. It also has what I think is excellent for these sorts of games, leveling suggestions for playing with different ability levels. So if you're playing with younger kids,
you can level it out. You're not crushing them with your supposedly superior vocabulary.
Right. Yes, that's yes. Right.
So speaking of kids, we have a couple on the kids game list. What are you recommending this year?
One of them is Snail Sprint, which is for 5 and up, a marvelous race game. And this is very simple. At the beginning of the game, you pick a card that tells you what snails you want to finish 1st, 2nd, and 3rd by color. And you keep that victory condition hidden, and then you use the dice to move the snails around the board. And you don't know who wins until the snails get up on the podium at the end for 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, and the person who has the color card that matches that is the winner. One of the other things that's marvelous about this is the metallic tin for the game is part of the race board. So the snails race up the side and over the top.
Fun.
Which is just really clever design.
Of course, racing and snails don't always go
correct.
In the same.
Yes.
But if
they are going to race, they are going to be able to climb up the side.
Exactly.
Of things.
Yes, exactly. And so the other one you have, Jim Lauder, is Genius Square.
Yes. And the Genius Square is a puzzle game where you have a 6x6 grid. And you have 9 shapes of different dimensions, sort of like Tetris pieces. And then you have a number of blocker cubes. And at the beginning of the game, you roll a number of dice that tells you where the blocker cubes need to go. And then you race against the other person. It's a 2-player game to fit all of the pieces into the resulting pattern that you have left open.
So that sounds tough,
it's
actually.
It's a great spatial recognition game, and it works for young kids, and it's actually something that adults would love to play because it's a puzzle game. And this is one where kids can wallop adults.
Because they're faster.
Because they're faster at seeing those sorts of things.
Yep.
Again, it has solo rules, so if you want to challenge yourself, it supposedly has over 62,000 variations possible. So it's got a lot of replayability.
All right, Jim Lauder, it is time for the 2019 Games to Give top pick. It is Wingspan.
Yes.
Tell us about this game
and
why you picked it.
Game insiders, this won't be a surprise. Wingspan is one of those games that has built up a lot of buzz over the year. It is a game about bird collecting. You are a bird enthusiast trying to attract birds to your wildlife refuge. And that in and of itself is kind of an unusual theme. The designer, Elizabeth Hargrave, layers on top of that a number of really complex, really interesting mechanics. There are choices that you have to make about resource management. What are you going to do with your food to attract the birds when you get the birds on your attracted into your area? They do different things. So you put a certain bird card into play. It changes the dynamic for play. There's a strategy to putting certain birds in play to get the points that are available on bonus cards. You can use your action to lay eggs, and those either count for points at the end of the game, or you can trade them in for more cards. So there are a lot of moving pieces, and that gives it a real depth of strategy that this is a really lovely middleweight game. It's not going to be so hard that you feel like you need to devote hours to studying the rules. But once you play it a few times, you're going to realize that there are strategies that you'll want to pursue to win.
And I imagine it's also teaching you a little bit about birds, too.
And it does. And they have facts about the birds. The art for the bird cards is lovely. It's just a sharp design. And it's one of those games that you can look at and see people will be playing this for a long time.
Well, it sounds wonderful. Wingspan, the Games to Gift top pick for 2019. And as always, Jim Lauder, it is such a pleasure to have you in the studio. Let's keep going for another 10 years.
Absolutely. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you as well, and Happy New Year. James Lauder is a writer, games expert, and the editor of the award-winning anthologies Hobby Games, The 100 Best, and Family Games, The 100 Best. This is the 10th anniversary of our annual Games to Gift list. There were a handful of games that we ran out of time to talk about in our on-air segment, but you can find the complete list at wuwm.com.